Thank you once again, Mr. Lynch. I mentioned in the update that I sent out last night that I would be giving a sermon on, guess what? I suspect that there are a lot of ministers that have a prophecy sermon of some sort, or at least are discussing what's happening in Ukraine. And they'll be doing it on the Sabbath. So possibly wherever you go, you might get something on the Ukraine crisis or the Russia crisis from the Russian standpoint of view. So what I did, and I'll give you the title here in a little bit, but what I did in thinking about this sermon was go to all the sources that we have from 1934 on, basically. And it is amazing when we look at what's happening in Europe that the Church of God for almost 100 years, let's say 88 years from 1934, has had this subject, you might say, under discussion. And we in the church are not surprised at what's going on. We may be surprised at how the European Union is united. We might be surprised on what's causing Germany to build up its military. But at the same time, even though we may be, it's amazing how we don't even have to talk. We can just stand back and go like this. They wanted me to raise this a little bit. And thank you very much. But the whole situation is, even though we in the church have not known the details of how everything's going to come to an end or a conclusion, at least we know the framework. We have the basic outline in mind. So with what's happened over there, it certainly drew our attention. Now, it's amazing that the world, I shouldn't say amazing, because we are a country that pretty much is involved in our own politics and our own lifestyle and what's happening here in America overall. But it was surprising as I was going through some of this information, and I have a 10-hour sermon here with all the information that I have up here. And you can imagine with everything that's been on the web, you know, how much information we could go through. But just to illustrate or demonstrate what the world does not know, in one of the articles that I went to, you have the link there, and then underneath you have some questions quite often about, in this case, the European Union, Russia, Ukraine. And one of the questions was, is Russia in the European Union? Now, that would no doubt in my mind not be a question that any of you would ask, because you know for sure the background and what's gone on overall. Now, some of our younger people may not be aware, but I think probably we are aware, because if we're younger, we've also been raised in a family that's been in the church for a long time. So we pretty much know a lot that's been going on. And as I start this sermon, I might mention that I have nothing new to offer. I come up with nothing as far as a revelation. Everything that I have that I'm going to give today comes from what we've been teaching, information. Now, I may not have been aware of it at the time, but I'm not a prophet. The prophecies are there. And I think, actually, brethren, that there's not going to be a need for a prophet that comes up with anything new. We will see perhaps what prophets do if there are prophets. But we have all the prophecies and all the details in the Bible already to know what's going to happen all the way to the end. Because the statement is at the end. We have that statement. And there are so many references about the end time, but some that specifically go right until the coming of Jesus Christ. So if we're looking for a prophet can't tell us anything. I think a prophet would be just giving the prophecies that are already there, I believe. The two witnesses, would they be prophets? Well, they could call them prophets, but again, it would only be detailing out what already is in the framework of prophecy. It would be nothing, just completely, totally new, I don't think. So what we have then today is everything that I have is something that we all may have heard or have access to. We have now some of the details of how this is coming to, I can't say fruition, because I think that means the fruit is ripe, maybe, but at least the tree is there, and we see kind of the buds starting out maybe a little bit, and we definitely see a cataclysm that is going on in Europe, and a catastrophe, according to Putin, of what's taking place. So I'll just start with that. Now, I have three scriptures that I'm going to begin with. One of those would be also from Mr. Franks, and also I think Khalil, I believe his name is, Isaac Khalil. He's from New Zealand, and an article came out this last week, maybe 2-3 days ago, about what's going on and a little bit of the background of to the world who wouldn't understand. So I'll go to Daniel first, and then to Luke 21, and then to Amos 3 will be my first three scriptures. And then I'm going to go to a background. I have a paper here that was printed, an article actually by Mr. Gene Hogberg. Some of you know him. You're familiar with Neil Hogberg, and when he writes for Discern, and I asked him, well, when you write, does your father get to see it? He said, I write nothing that my father, well, I write everything that my father does see. So he always goes by his father, who was over the news bureau in Ambassador College back in the late 50s, but definitely the 60s. So anyway, he wrote this article, and it's talking about the 45 years that this topic has been in the Plain Truth magazine, back to 1934, because he wrote this in 1979. And by the way, after about 1986, you don't see much coming from the church, at least back in 86, the church that existed then. You don't see anything after 86 coming about the European Union. It seemed kind of that came to almost a dead stop. So let's go to Daniel. And by the way, after that, I'll go into some of the details of what's happening and how they fit into prophecy. The Bible shining light on the news concerning prophecy. So we go to Daniel, and I'll just mention from an overview description that the book of Daniel is not in the prophets of the Old Testament. It's the law, the prophets, and the writings. But Daniel is not in the prophets, it's in the writings. And in the section in the writings would be in the restoration books. So it's one of the restoration books in a section in the writings on the restoration. And what we're looking at then is, of course, the downfall of the house of Judah. We know the house of Israel started with Jeroboam, and the house of Judah, did I say Israel? The house of Judah with Rehoboam. And both of those houses, so to speak, had 20 kings. And yet the kings in the house of Israel didn't last too long. They were taken into captivity way before the house of Judah. And so you have, starting here, the Babylonian captivity. And Daniel and his three friends are in that captivity. So what we're looking at in restoration, you have the end, basically, of the house of Judah. House of Israel has already been taken into captivity. So you have now that period of time where the physical kingdom of Israel no longer exists. So the restoration is a restoration of Israel. Only it's a restoration in a spiritual way, because we see at the very end of Daniel how, well, chapter 2 actually, where you see the overview, and you have the last of the the image, the toes of that image is crushed, and the kingdom of God is set up. So always remember, restoration would be starting with full restoration, in fact, would be starting with the kingdom of God being established on earth by Jesus Christ. So now you understand where we're at here. So we have details, and in Daniel, of course, we have a lot of details, but we'll go to Daniel 11. And in Daniel 11, then, you see in verse 40, Daniel 11 and verse 40, at the time of the end. So you can guess that this in history would be somewhere near the time of the end. That's a no-brainer. Okay, so we got that locked in. At the time of the end. So that'd be the time ending this 6,000-year period on this earth before Jesus Christ returns. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. King James, I think, is push at him. But that word push is properly translated here, I think, from all that I've seen, where there would be an aggressive attack or some type of an aggression, at least, toward the king of the north. And the king of the north will come at him like a whirlwind and shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. Verse 41, he shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries will be overthrown. So we see here that the king of the north comes down. More of the detail in this in these verses would be he goes all the way down to Egypt, Ethiopia, and I think Libya is also mentioned here, but all the way down to Egypt would be a pretty strong country, I would think, at that time. The military buildup maybe by the Muslims in this case, because the Muslims would definitely have an antagonism, according to the king of the north, which would be, and I put this in quotes, Christian. So what we have here then is king of the north coming all the way into the glorious land, into Jerusalem. And keep that in mind too, because there's a couple things that go all the way back to about 1981, 1986 in a Plain Truth article, which is also amazing that even back then, the force that would come in was called a certain type of force. And into the glorious land. So we see what's happening here that Luke 21 picks up on. And I don't know if it's this account which says, as you read in the book of Daniel, the desolation that is going to take place. We have, of course, Matthew, Mark, and Luke that all refer to it. But in Luke 21, you have Christ talking about the end time. Yeah, Luke 21. Luke 21, and starting out in verse 8, the signs of Christ's coming. Now, what we pick up on is Jesus Christ tells us what are not the signs of Christ's coming. Because sometimes we think, oh, major earthquake, volcanic eruption, tsunami that goes along with an earthquake, a major earthquake perhaps. So you have all of these catastrophes that hit the earth that are not going to be the signs of the end. And he mentions a few of those. Also, the first one, again, is anybody who says, well, I am the Christ, don't go after him. We know when Christ comes, all eyes will see Jesus Christ when he comes. It's going to be going around the earth completely and totally so that everybody knows that when Christ comes, it's not going to be somebody in the desert saying, I'm Christ, come and follow me. So then it talks about these earthquakes and the famines and all the problems that have gone on. And by the way, pestilence would include the virus. I looked up pestilence, and it's all types of pestilence, and definitely what we went through with the pandemic would be a pestilence. And it was fairly worldwide, as we know. And then it tells, by the way, in all of this period of time, individuals are going to be persecuted. There's a testimony that we have to give if we're taken in before a king. So during this entire period, from the time Jesus Christ ascends to heaven, the church is going to be persecuted. But notice now coming down to verse 20, but, okay, so the question is about the sign of Christ's coming. Verse 20, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. So if we're looking at an end time event, brethren, that tells us that Jesus Christ's coming is nearer, then it's when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. Back in the, it may have been 1939, 40, 41, 42, but Mr. Armstrong was saying during the war, he said, if Jerusalem is surrounded by armies and is taken, you know this is the end time. But it didn't happen back then. It did not happen back then. So then, verse 21, excuse me, you know the desolation is near. The desolation that other verses and other books say is found in Daniel. Let him who reads understand. I won't go to the other verses that say that. And I don't think it is here. So you have then, let Judah flee. These are the days of vengeance, verse 22. Woe to those who are pregnant. There's great distress in the land, verse 23. 24, they will fall by the edge of the sword, be led away captive, and Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, basically, I look at this, I may be wrong, so please excuse the speculation, but starting in Daniel, where Babylon comes in, you have now from that captivity of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, you have the four world empires that are mentioned in Daniel. And they're all Gentiles. We know that, as we'll see maybe a little later on if I have time to read it, we know that Germany thought that they were an extension of the Roman Empire. Now, Mussolini definitely, I think, called the empire that was being established there the Holy Roman Empire. So what we see then in the overview, we see basically Gentiles, 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 Gentiles. All the way into the 40s, you have a world power being the Gentiles. And at the end, it's going to be the Gentiles that are in charge. Jerusalem will be trampled. The Gentiles are still in power right up to the time of Jesus Christ's return. Now, there is that just one period of time from about 1800 into maybe 200 years where you have a comeback, and some have said that's seven times punishment of Israel. If you're old enough, you remember reading some of that material. But there would be Israel coming back after they'd been punished. But whatever the case, there definitely was, and we're kind of ending the, not the Gentile period, but the period which was just kind of a disruption a little bit of the Gentile power. And what we have seen is a very strong Great Britain, a very strong America after World War II. But that is coming to a close. It wasn't going to last over a couple hundred years. And the Gentiles would still come back in tremendous power. But at the coming of Christ, he's going to crush the toes. He's going to, as a mighty stone, crush the Gentiles. The Gentile period will come to an end. No longer will it be Gentiles. The takeover will be by spiritual Jews, right? Spiritual Jews are going to take over. So what we have here is this second scripture showing that the restoration is going to come to an end, or the restoration is going to start, I should say. At this point, Jerusalem is taken over. You have about a 3.5-year period, and then the rule of Jesus Christ. So what we're looking at then, and I want to focus on verse 20, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. And this is what we've always looked at. This is the focus of Jesus Christ's instruction to us as to what to look for. What do we look for when it comes to the time of the end? And it is, but when you see Jerusalem. Now with that, who's going to take over Jerusalem? Well, what we've said there is there'll be a European Union. And people have scoffed at that. I can tell you just a really short story, and that is when we were up in the Ontario area. We lived in Buffalo, but our area, as Mr. Neff knows, big areas back then, you were all over the place. And so we were in Ontario, and I had a new prospective member visit. And the prospective member had I'd never seen them before. It was a husband and wife. They had their minister there. And it was, you know, you guys are all off on prophecy. The Germans are not going to rise again. I remember that. The Germans are not going to rise again. This European Union idea that you have, that is not going to happen. It's the Russians that we should be concerned with. I remember that definitely, the Russians. And that every chain, if it has a weak link, then it just disables the chain, you know, disables the power of the chain. It is not going to happen. You guys have a weak, weak link. You don't know what's going to happen in prophecy. And it's like, well, wait around for a while, I guess. That's the only thing you can do. And that minister probably has died by now because he was older than I. At the time, I was probably, how old? I was just you're younger than my wife at that time. So, no, actually, we're pretty close in age. We're less than a year apart. But it's interesting, that minister had no idea of what was going to happen at the end time. We had been preaching about it, maybe not in exact perfect detail, because you can see what Mr. Armstrong was saying in 1934, and some of the ideas, when it came to the detail, was not totally correct. But he had the framework. He did. He had the outline. He definitely did. And as time went on, we understood more and more and more, especially after World War II, where we saw what was going to be taking place. So we go to Amos then, and we see in one of these so-called minor books, it's Hosea, which is basically about Ephraim. If you go through Ephraim, not being a part of this European Union, you can pretty pick that up and understand at the end time that Ephraim is not going to be in the European Union. And basically, by about 1979, we all understood it wouldn't be because they wouldn't go along with the European currency. And when you don't go along with the currency, you know you're not going to be a part of the system. So you see that Ephraim is going to go to Assyria, depend on Assyria, maybe depend upon the European Union itself for help, and they did. You go to Joel, and I'll just point out that this is talking about the Assyrians and how strong they're going to be, but it talks about them being a lion, which gives a little bit more substance to where we're going in Amos 3. And by the way, this is the attack by the Assyrians, basically in the time of Jacob's trouble. But Amos 3 and verse 7. Surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets. Now, when I read the prophets, it's basically, I think, there were prophets, of course, at that time, and there would be more prophecies at the time that this was written. More of an understanding given, more detail. But after all of these prophets, like I said, are established, the Bible is here, now we just give the information from the prophets. We give that information. I memorized Amos 3 and verse 7 a long time ago. We used to have these little scripture cards, and Amos 3, 7 was one of them. But verse 8, I hadn't memorized. But reading this morning about Joel, I just went through just a summary. I sketched through Hosea and Joel leading up to Amos. And verse 8, notice, a lion has roared. a lion has roared. Brethren, I think the lion just roared. Really do. Now, before the lion roared, but this would be one of the last roarings, you might say. The lion has roared. And based on what is happening, you can see such a major 180-degree change of the Germans themselves and the passivism that has been held by Germany and the European Union overall, although more so Germany, but the European Union and their attitude and what they've been doing and what they're saying right now, that they were not strong. They were not strong enough to combat what's taking place. And by the way, at the during the President Trump's administration, he was going to pull 12,000 troops out of the European Union, or NATO, better yet, NATO. 12,000 troops out of NATO. When President, and at that time, by the way, Merkel said, this is a problem because the United States has been our security. They didn't have to build up their military because they depend on the United States. And they can put all that money into the economy and become the strongest European nation. So Merkel said, we're in trouble. This was within 2 years before the chancellorship was changed. And Merkel said, we're going to have to do something. But Merkel, being German and with the history of Germany and the fear of Germany, what could they do? And now, of course, I'll skip ahead a little bit and thought, and you already know this, the whole world celebrates the fact that Germany's going to be stronger. Such a strong fear of Germany for 70 years. 70 years, they feared Germany. In fact, you had a buffer zone called the Western Eastern Satellite Countries, I guess we would say there, that would include Ukraine, Belarus, some of those countries that stretch along, what, an 830-mile border, I think I read this past week. And so there was a buffer zone between Russia and Germany because they wanted that buffer zone to buffer against a German attack. It was all, the European Union started because of a fear of Germany. If you bring Germany into the fold, basically keep your enemies close to you. You've heard that statement? And that's what they were going to do. They were going to include them, and now you have Germany as a democracy. So a lion has roared. Who will fear, or who will not fear, is what it says. Who will not fear? The Lord has spoken. Who can but prophesy? And that's what the church has been doing. Knowing what's going to happen, the church has been prophesying about this roaring lion. And we have so many scriptures, Jeremiah, for example, mainly talking about the Babylonian captivity that Judah thought would not take place. Remember, Dr. Levy gave the FI online on Jeremiah. And they said, as long as the temple is here, it can't touch us. As long as this temple is here, God is going to protect us no matter what we do. We remember that overall. So God has given us information here. He's revealed things. Like he said, his secret to the servants of prophets. You know, in all of this, we know the world is Satan's world. And we know that there are demonic beings in charge of nations. You think of Daniel and Michael, and then you think of Persia and the powers, the demonic powers, spirit powers that were there, and how Michael said, had to get some help over here before I could come and answer you, Daniel. So you know these powerful demonic beings are there, and you know that they don't fully understand that they are promoting the fulfilling of God's prophecies. It's what they're doing. And of course, human nature is deceitful above all things, and human nature, so-called, is Satan's nature, right? So they deceive themselves. So what we've been doing, and I'll try to go through this quickly because I do have at least another 30 minutes of information here, but I wanted to give that background that God has revealed to his serpents. And that could be the title, but it's not. I thought the title would be better, this one in, verse 8, "A Lion Has Roared." I think that would be basically what we're seeing in all of this, a roaring lion, maybe a cub lion at this time, but certainly you got a roar coming. This article by Gene Hogberg in February of 1979 talks about the rocky road toward European unity. And the subtitle on this would have been "The Process Foretold for 45 Years." And what we have here, and how many of you remember this? Well, I know some of you do, because you were around at that time, definitely. And Linda, did you raise your hand? Mrs. Neff? Mrs. Neff is much younger than Mr. Neff. I hope all of you understand that. And she just had a birthday sometime in the last year. And I think she's 47 years old. So is the United States of Europe coming soon? So all of us who are older, if we were around in 1968, we can remember this. And Mr. Armstrong did have an interview with Franz Josef Strauss. And he thought at that time that Franz Josef Strauss could have been the leader, maybe even the beast. I don't know if it went that far. But whatever the case, you know, we were talking about the United States of Europe back then. And that was, like I said, 1968. And 1968 is 54 years ago. So that's a long time that the church has been talking about the European Union and being scoffed at by the world overall, by other religions. And I might mention that you will find in the last 20 years that there have been some religions even that have talked about the European Union. In fact, one guy wrote a book, and I know one of our ministers went to him because he didn't give any credit to the Church of God, but it was almost like, well, he's read all of our articles on prophecy and he's put it down and he's taken credit for himself. So one of our ministers actually went to one of his meetings, and after the meeting went up and said, "Are you familiar with Herbert W. Armstrong?" And the guy kind of looks down and it's like, everything you've said in that book is pretty much what our church has been teaching all this time. And he finally had to agree that he got it from the Church of God. How far back, I don't know, but it would have been in probably the 60s, 70s, 80s, the material that he read. So if you come across another, in fact, there was a San Antonio minister when we were down there, I remember, huge number of people, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, and he was preaching this stuff, and some of his pictures look just like our pictures, and you know where he got this stuff. Now, some may have known a little bit. I'm not saying that everybody got everything from us. Some may have known snippets, but overall, we're the ones that it would come from. So you have little plain truth pages being pictured here, giant world power rising of the common market. There's a new Europe coming in another plain truth magazine. Is the United States of Europe coming soon? Another one. Where is Europe headed? And maybe everything about the European Union. And I didn't pull all these up, but if you go into the HWA library, you can find a lot of these things. So what we have here, it's interesting, and I could tell you that it gives us the Plain Truth magazines, the 1978 issue, the 1951 issue, the 1952 issue, 1934. It comes up with all of these numbers, proving that we have been telling the world for a long time that the European Union is going to be strong. In fact, I think there is, even in this article, And by the way, this article has a lot to do with the European monetary system that was started, supposed to start in January of 1979. But you have some problems because the French government, and then you had problems with Great Britain saying, okay, we're with it. Yeah, we will change our currency because, you know, you like your currency and you don't want to lose it. And what is stated in this book here at the end of the Europeans concerning Germany is that you can't have, I say Germany, it's talking about the European Union, but it connected it with Germany because this man said everything depends on the Germans. But he also said you cannot have a united European Union without a common currency and without a strong military. Those two things are mentioned in this book. I would recommend it. $15 for a hardcover on Amazon if it's used. And I think you can get it for as little as $7.95. It's very good to have. I asked Mr. Joel Meeker if he had this book, and he said, yes, I have it. I've read it several times, is what he said. There's another one that you might be interested in, and it's one that we used in international relations by Gene Hogberg and Dr. Dorothy. They were the teachers back in 1965. And it was Politics Among the Nations by Hans J. Morgenthau. So if you just go to that one, that there's five editions. It was the third edition. That makes Mr. Neff and I old because there's been two more editions since then. But it was very good because it was live, dominate, and propagate. Those three words, live, dominate, and propagate. And he was talking about that. That is what pushes nations on. And of course, Putin wants to dominate. He hated the fall of the Soviet Union back in 1988 when the German wall came down. I think he was actually living in East Germany at the time. And he said, the most catastrophic, there we go, event in recent history was when the wall came down and there was a unification of East and West Germany. He was a young man living there then, and what he really hated was to see the complete collapse of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic, the USSR. He hated that, and what he wants to do before he dies is establish another USSR to bring it back to where it was back in the 1980s. He just hates that. So he'll do anything to conquer these lands, no matter if he ruins his economy. Well, maybe that's the only thing that'll stop him, the economy. So anyway, in the London Times, when the European monetary system was being organized and they thought it was going to get off to a quick start, Great Britain was not with it. The French were not with it. The French finally came on. Great Britain never did. They've never had the euro. They've always had the pound, right? Still, if you go there, it's the pound. You have Southern Ireland, which is the serpent in the path of the horse biting the heel. I think that's on their flag in Southern Ireland only. And we have problems over here because they have a lot of cousins over here that maybe have the same attitude. But whatever the case, here is a columnist in November 14th of the 1950s. He actually said this. He said, it was in 1979 that he said this. He said, if we muff up this one, the British, as we muffed up the inception of the EEC back in the 50s, we could find ourselves once more standing on the platform while the European train moves off, the European Union. And so you have these things that took place in the 70s and 80s, and there's a lot more that I could go to in just this one article. And if need be, I could point you to those because they're free of charge. You can download so many of the Plain Truth Magazine articles. So what we see then, and it's interesting, as we go along here, there was a 1986 article, Soviet Economic Crisis, then a question mark, prelude to United Europe. Now, as we see what's happening with the Russian crisis, we could call it, and the Ukrainian crisis, we see that their economy is being destroyed. All the sanctions are basically ruining them. There's SWIFT, S-W-I-F-T, it's basically an organization of 11,000 banks, and they can move money from continent to continent. And if Russia has been taken out of that, and I think they have, not temporarily, but they have in some ways been taken out, not of all of the SWIFT, but that will not help them a bit because they can't move probably some of their own money, the $635 billion that they've stored up. They can't move that into other accounts. So with sanctions, with what's happening, if their economy is ruined, and again, we look at this back in 1986, we're saying if the Soviet economy goes flat, Europe is going to be more united. Now, we know there's more to the story than that because of the attack on Ukraine and the lack of security. We have another article here, Europe's Sleeping Giant Awakens, and how Merkel's successor, Olaf Scholz, has, well, he surprised everybody when he stood up to say we're going to increase our military funds, because this guy is so quiet. He was the treasurer, and he didn't want to spend money. He did not want to spend money. And for him to stand up and come out and say we're going to equal that 2% that President Trump wanted, because President Trump said, you've got to do your part in NATO. And it's like, President Trump, don't you realize we don't want them to build up that 2%? We don't want them to have 2% of their GDP at all in military, because it's fulfilling prophecy. So actually what the church is saying, go to it, President Trump, you're fulfilling prophecy. That's what we are saying. But not only that, they're building up more than that. From what I read, it's $100 billion, even more than the 2%. And, here's that quote I referred to earlier from Putin. He described the East German city of Dresden when the wall fell. He described it the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. So there's a spirit working in him where he knows, I think, what's happening. But basically, this whole article about Europe's sleeping giant awaken is talking about the attitude that Germany has, where they were a country of pacifists, and now not only Scholz, but everybody is behind him. Didn't they have 10,000 on the streets in Berlin promoting, let's go after Ukraine? Now, there's an article here too. It's a Sadat plays his European card, but this is from the Plain Truth magazine of 1981. And just to sum it up, it says there was a secret European document that was leaked to the press. This was in the time of President Carter's Camp David negotiations for peace in the Middle East with Sadat and the leaders at that time. And Sadat called for more European involvement in the Middle East. Now notice that. He goes to the European Parliament in 1981. Well, it was probably 1980 because President Carter was only president until 1981. So it would have been sometime in the 1980s. He goes to the European Parliament when he goes to Europe. And what he says is, I came to the Europeans, let's try to combine our efforts towards giving momentum to the peace process. Bottom line in all of this, and I'll skip a little bit of it, but the Egyptian president said that Europe, now this is 41 years ago, Europe might make contributions to guarantee any settlement that might be reached, Palestinians with the Israelis. In fact, they were calling in 1981 for a return to territorial dominations of pre-1967. Okay, go back to this little Israel. Specifically, he called for West European participation in a peacekeeping force in the region. He wants the European Union to go down into Jerusalem, into Israel, to keep the peace. Think of Luke 21. That would fulfill that prophecy. In other words, the world is saying, yeah, we wanted this. Europe is saying, yeah, we're looking forward to this. Outside of Europe, it's like, oh, finally, peace, peace. When Jerusalem falls, it's going to be peace, peace, and there is no peace. So that's another one. And I read out of some report, I think it was a Palestinian, Israeli, German situation, and how the Palestinians are still calling for a peacekeeping force to come into Jerusalem to settle things, to stop these Israelis from, you know, hurting those poor people in the Palestinian area. You know, these very peaceful people that are surrounding Israel, you know, those poor people, give them their territory and we solve everything, right? Germany begins rearmament, another one. And President Macron said that this is a turning point in the history of Europe and France that will have lasting, profound consequences on our lives. They will have consequences on our continent's geopolitics. Geopolitics, I thought, what does that word mean? So just to let you know, I read that word and I looked it up, and it's international relations. International relations. Okay, we have from Germany and EU's need for security and why they actually increase the amount of money. Why they increase the amount of money. The shift among European leaders shows that this is not about Ukraine. It's a change in the global order that we have slipped into a new Cold War with Russia. So the whole reason is the Europeans say, you know, we're not very secure right now. Germany itself, the defense minister said, we are so weak, we can do nothing. Now, in all of this, I might add from my own thoughts that, and maybe others too, I'm sure a lot of people are thinking this way, not just me, but I think that the Germans have blueprints of very strong military hardware, knowing the Germans. They had tanks pre-World War I. They weren't supposed to have any tanks, and yet they went over to Russia, which is ironic, to test all of their tanks out. And then they had the war in Spain where they were testing their aircraft and their tanks. And all of us probably in the past some time read about it. Now, you have a beast power, and we've thought that the beast power all along is going to be, the beast power is going to be Germany, from Germany. The beast will be from Germany. Let me put it that way, we thought. And I think it's right myself. I think just based on what we've seen with the Germans as a dominant country in Europe, and more so, having the warlike attitude, warlike character. When this started happening, I thought, you know, I think in my files, and we, about 2 years ago, Marion did a lot of the work, but I had my files in kind of an A, B, C, A to Z. And so I decided, and Marion basically kind of put them all in different folders, but we went through and we put categories down. One was prophecy. The feasts I always had in categories based on each feast. But I thought, you know, I think when we went through that a couple of years ago, I saw a thesis on German character. And true enough, when I went to the folder, it's not a real large folder because I've never given a lot of prophecy sermons. I realize I'm not a very good prophet, that any speculations I would have wouldn't come to fruition anyway. Would be like, no, that didn't happen. So anyway, certainly I came to a thesis by Gerhard Marx. And those of you who have been around a long time remember Gerhard Marx. I went to England for 1 year, and he was there that year. And I'm not saying the year of 69, but in 69, he wrote a thesis called A 2,000-Year Analysis of the German Character. And it is just amazing. I have all of the, if I can find it here, all of the pages down that I want to read you. It's 106 pages long. And it is, this came from the Ambassador College Library in Pasadena. Somebody actually took it and copied it. And then somehow I came across this copy, or somebody gave it to me, I don't know. It has coffee spilled on it by a German who was reading it. No, I don't know where the coffee came from, but whatever the case, it is revealing as to why we are 99% positive and more that this warlike country is going to be Germany. The beast would be coming from Germany. So it's a thesis presented to the faculty of the graduate school in Ambassador College. And maybe there are other, it's actually a book too. If you go onto Amazon, it's a book that's no longer in publication, but it was just a small book. And the pages I have here would be first the preface. And this is from Winston Churchill. The Germans combine in the most deadly manner the qualities of the warrior and the slave. They do not value freedom themselves. And you know, in one of the reports that came out in the last 2 weeks, just from some The Guardian or Washington Post or whatever, had that same quote, that they do not value freedom themselves. Meaning, if a dictator comes along that is strong, they go for it. And the spectacle of it in others is hateful to them. Whenever they become strong, they seek their prey, and they will follow with an iron discipline anyone who will lead them to it. Adolf Hitler, Bismarck, or whoever. Was Bismarck World War I? I forget. I think so. So it's Winston Churchill was a historian, and he was had a lot of discernment as to the nature of human beings or certain personalities. But I thought that was interesting to start the entire thesis. We go on to another quote here, and it's the Roman description of the German character. The Roman description of the German character. First of all, he talks about their sanctity of family life. So he's talking about when the Germans are ruled by a democratic society, they have good family life. They only believe in one wife. Unlike, according to the Romans, the other barbarians had a plurality of wives, but they only had one. Their hospitality in strangers, their just laws, their chaste conduct, something that could not be said of the Romans of that time. The Germans had what the Romans lacked, a pure morality. We're talking about the Germans here. Then you go on, and what the Germans excelled in. If there was an overriding German character trait that struck the Romans, especially, and this would be back 100 AD, 200 AD, during the time before the Romans fell, it was the cruel, aggressive, warlike nature of theirs, an overriding German character trait. It's like this pure, chaste morality that they had, these nice, peace-loving people. In the book on by Luigi Barzini, it's the mutable Germans, where they come, even their army was docile. They didn't like war, but that leader that comes along incites them to be the disciplined, strong country. The history of German warfare, a section on that, and I think there's maybe one or two, let's see. I think I just have one quote on that, which is enough. It says, next note, another historian's description of the ancient Germans. This is from Emil Ludwig, The Germans, page 17. They talk about the a German passion for war. In fact, they said if the Germans couldn't fight, if there's no war going on, they would join another army. The Hessians joined the Romans to fight their own people. The Germans loved to fight. So if they had to fight their own people, they would just sign up, pay me, and I'll fight my own people. Well, George Washington with the English had some of them, but they were caught at night by George Washington when he crossed the river, and it was a surprise attack, and even the Hessians couldn't do anything about it. They weren't getting paid enough, so they didn't fight, I guess. The fact that they were all warriors was the only thing that remained common to the Teutonic tribes. Their heavens were battlefields, their gods, warrior heroes, their popular assemblies, army reviews. Political rule found expression solely in war command. And you think of the army reviews and some of the sites during World War II when you had those thousands of troops there, all standing at attention. And some say, well, that was the photographs, they made them bigger. And they could have, but there were still a lot of troops there. Let's go to just a couple more quotes here. On page 83, it's a quote from Adolf Hitler concerning the Jews and Christianity. Here he says, Hitler vehemently wanted to rid the world of the humane aspect of both Judaism and Christianity. This is from the Ten Commandments by Hermann Rauschning, probably a good Irishman, page 9. After the destruction of Judaism, he said, here's his quote, the extinction of Christian slave morals must follow logically. I shall know the moment when to confront, after we get rid of the Jews, for the sake of the German people and the world, their Asiatic slave morals with our picture of the free man, the godlike man. That's from Adolf Hitler. And finally, on page 90, and these are just some quotes from, I think, the Charlemagne period, perhaps it was, Germans and their divine mission is what it's all about. Two centuries later, and this is in 1240 AD, we have recorded for us in the great North German law book, Speculum Saxonicum, the empire is held from God alone. Divine. Emperor and Pope are supreme, each in what has been entrusted to him. The Pope in what concerns the soul, the Emperor in all that belongs to the body and the knighthood. At this same time, the German Eich in his Saxon Mirror stated that God has successfully created four empires. It's interesting, he's quoting from the Bible. And the present one, that's the Third Reich, okay. The present one, I guess it would be. Maybe he's talking about, let's see, at the same time. No, that 1240 AD, so that would not be the Third Reich, would it? So basically, though, it was the Germans. The present one is the continuation of the old Roman Empire. Caesar had conquered Germany, and the German Franks had then inherited the empire from the Romans. And that's the development of the German public mind. So you can get a lackadaisical, peaceful, loving, economically strong German or Germany, and you get a leader that is fired up, and Johnny barred the door. because it's going to be tough. So there's a lot here that that we look at, and we realize that this is a different time. We see in Luke 21, and I'll go there for the last scripture. In the meantime, I'll just say as I'm going there that keep your eyes on Germany. Keep your eyes, follow what's going on with Russia, with Ukraine. And when everything kind of slows down a little bit, when Russia maybe takes Ukraine, because we don't know what's going to happen in Ukraine. There's not going to be a ground war. There's not going to be no flight zones because NATO, Europe does not want to get into a war. You're not going to see that happen. But the main thing that did transpire that is so important to us is that we have a Europe that wants to defend themselves, wants to become stronger. A Germany that we all know has these warlike characteristics. We see that. If there's nothing else that comes out from this than a stronger Europe, then God has helped fulfill prophecy. He doesn't help anything. He just causes it to happen, doesn't he? We see that happening. So in Luke 21, what we have to look at is when all of this happens, and this is in the context of when you see Jerusalem surrounded. Take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts, verse 34, Luke 21:34. Take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, cares of this life, and that day, what day? Well, verse 20, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, when you see that day, or what is leading up to it, we can come back to this time right now. This is a day that will be looked at, a day in ignominy? Was that the term that was used? But by FDR, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Infamy. There we go. Didn't sound right. A day of infamy. And what happened in the last 3 weeks is one of the most crucial moments in the history of the development of end time events. It just is. So cares of this life and that day come upon you unexpectedly. It will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the earth, because they don't see it coming. We are not in darkness. We are in the light. We know these things. So watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man, because it's that close to stand before the Son of Man. What this means is not to, Father, please count me worthy. That's not what it means to pray. It means to pray always that you take heed to yourselves. We're taking heed to ourselves and praying that we won't be caught up in a situation like the 10 virgins, where we're asleep and we are not really concerned about our own character. We want to be a worthy bride of Jesus Christ, don't we? So let's all remember, brethren, with all this happening, that the lion has roared, and we need to take heed.